A 7-year-old girl sits by a riverbank, restless and drowsy, watching her sister read a book with no pictures or conversations. Suddenly, a white rabbit with pink eyes dashes past, muttering about being late, pulling a watch from his waistcoat pocket. Without hesitation, she follows him down a rabbit hole and tumbles into a world where logic dissolves, language plays tricks, and nothing remains fixed, not even her own size. This moment of childish impulse launched one of literature's most enduring adventures, one that would reshape how we think about childhood, imagination, and the very nature of meaning itself. What began as an impromptu story told during boat trips with the Little Sisters in 1862 became a cultural earthquake. Carol's tales have infiltrated everything from Freudian psychology to 1960s counterculture, from Salvador Dali's surrealist paintings to Jefferson Airplane's psychedelic anthems. Translated into over 170 languages and adapted countless times, these books refuse to age. Why? Because Carol did something radical. He treated children as intellectually sophisticated beings capable of appreciating paradox, wordplay, and philosophical puzzles. He didn't write down to young readers. He invited them into a world where their natural resistance to boredom and hunger for nonsense became virtues rather than flaws to be corrected. Alice's first crisis in Wonderland is existential. After drinking from a mysterious bottle, she shrinks to 10 inches, then grows so enormous her neck stretches like a telescope. She cries pools of tears, forgets multiplication tables, and can't remember who she is. "I'm sure I'm not Ada," she insists, "for her hair goes in such long ringlets, and mine doesn't go in ringlets at all." Identity becomes fluid, tied to arbitrary physical markers. This mirrors actual childhood, where bodies grow unpredictably and adults measure worth by inches. Alice discovers that size determines power. When small, she's ignored or threatened. When large, she's feared. Yet neither brings satisfaction. The golden key to the beautiful garden remains perpetually out of reach. Carol understood something profound. Growing up isn't linear progression, but bewildering transformation. Alice arrives already more reasonable than anyone she meets. The Mock Turtle weeping over non-existent education, the Queen demanding executions for imaginary offenses, the Mad Hatter trapped in eternal tea time. The journey doesn't mature her toward adult wisdom, it reveals how much nonsense adults have normalized. "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty declares, "it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less." This isn't wordplay. It's linguistic warfare, where meaning constantly escapes capture. Alice confuses the mouse's tail with his tail. The March Hare insists she should say what she means. She protests she does. She means what she says, which is the same thing. "Not the same thing a bit," the Hatter interrupts. "Why, you might just as well say that I see what I eat is the same thing as I eat what I see." These aren't mere puns. They expose how language acquisition might diminish our ability to express genuine feeling. Children possess emotional landscapes exceeding their vocabulary. How do you name the peculiar loneliness of being the only reasonable person in an unreasonable world? The creatures embody this linguistic confusion. The Cheshire Cat reduces itself to pure grin, a smile without substance. The Mock Turtle weeps for a past he never experienced. The Bread and Butterfly, wings of thin bread, body of crust, head of sugar lump, could only exist where words create reality rather than describe it. These portmanteau creatures refuse stable meaning, like childhood desires that transform endlessly. A book becomes a pet, becomes a lover, becomes a longing you can't quite name. Alice worries constantly about eating and being eaten, yet consumes almost nothing. She converses with would-be dinners, the Mock Turtle, the Logster, the mutton who bows before she can carve him. When she finally yanks the tablecloth, crashing the banquet to the floor, it's anarchic rage against desires that can never be satisfied. Carol's darkest insight? In a world governed by chance rather than causality, satisfaction becomes impossible. The Mad Hatter's Tea Party continues eternally at 6 o'clock, the table rotating but never clearing. The Queen's croquet game uses live flamingos as mallets and hedgehogs as balls, creatures that refuse to stay still, transforming the game into chaos. The White Queen offers jam every other day, jam yesterday, and jam tomorrow, but never jam today. This is the cruel mathematics of desire. We hunger for what we lack, remember what we've lost, anticipate what we'll gain, but the present moment remains perpetually empty. The Red Queen runs frantically with Alice, landscape whirling around them, yet they stay in exactly the same place. It takes all the running you can do to keep in the same place. When Alice encounters the sleeping Red King, Tweedledee poses a disturbing question. He's dreaming about you. And if he left off dreaming about you, where do you suppose you'd be? Alice's tearful protest proves nothing. They might be dream tears in a dream world. This philosophical puzzle haunts both books' endings. Alice wakes on the riverbank, or does she? She wakes holding her kitten, which had been the Red Queen, or had it? Carol refuses to settle the question, leaving us suspended between realities. The White Knight, constantly falling off his horse, carries impractical inventions, an upside-down box for clothes, a beehive on his saddle. His absurd preparations mirror our own futile attempts to impose order on chaos. These aren't just children's fantasies. They're sophisticated explorations of consciousness that anticipate 20th century philosophy. Humpty Dumpty's claim that words mean whatever he chooses previews debates about linguistic relativism. The Cheshire Cat, reduced to pure grin, questions the relationship between essence and appearance. Alice, unable to prove she's not a dream character, confronts the problem of solipsism that philosophers still wrestle with today. Carol's genius was recognizing that childhood operates by a different, equally valid logic. Children instinctively understand that rules are arbitrary, language is slippery, identity is performance, and time is elastic, truths adults have forgotten. The book's violence, the Queen's execution orders, Alice destroying the banquet, her final cry, "You're nothing but a pack of cards," is necessary rebellion against arbitrary rules masquerading as natural laws. Both books end with waking, but Carol frames these endings with mourning rather than relief. Alice's sister imagines her grown, telling these tales to her own children, remembering her own child life and the happy summer days. This melancholy recognition that we must leave Wonderland, must grow up, must forget, gives the books their emotional power. They're not escapist fantasies, but elegies for a way of knowing the world that adulthood systematically destroys. The looking glass world, where you run frantically to stay still, where jam comes yesterday and tomorrow but never today, isn't fantasy. It's a mirror held up to our own world's absurdities, the ones we've learned to ignore. We've forgotten what Carol knew. Boredom can be a portal, nonsense a teacher, and rabbit holes lead somewhere essential. We chase satisfaction while forgetting how to play with language, logic, and possibility. The question isn't whether you're Alice or the Red King, it's whether you've lost the capacity to wonder. Children possess what we've sacrificed for control, the ability to take nonsense seriously, to let boredom become curiosity, to follow white rabbits down impossible holes. Here's your invitation. Let yourself fall. Follow the impulse that makes no sense. Talk to the flowers. Question the arbitrary rules you've mistaken for natural laws. Remember that you're not a fixed self, but a series of transformations. Not a rational calculator, but a creature of appetite and desire. Not a finished adult, but a work still capable of wonder. The real tragedy isn't falling down rabbit holes, it's forgetting they exist at all.